Hi, y'all. You're listening to Ordinary People, Ordinary Things with me, your host, Melissa Radke, the ordinariest of us all. Oh, I am so excited about today. I am excited about today because the woman is ordinary. Does that sound bad? Just hang on, let me finish. She is ordinary. The topic is ordinary. And y'all know clearly how I feel about ordinary people and ordinary things coming on this show and talking about everyday mundane, because it's our life. Like I don't even know the best way to describe it. Okay. But she's just ordinary and she's handling this mundane happens to so many people event, but she's handling it in extraordinary ways. And so today's guest is just like right up my alley. Let me explain. I don't think I have done a podcast episode yet on this subject. And why not? It's everywhere. It hits almost every family that you know that I know. Maybe it's our family. Maybe it's our neighbors. Maybe it's our parents. But it's so prevalent. And guys, I'm talking about divorce. So here's the story. Last fall, I met this woman. And you're just going to eat her up. You are. I thought she was so kind. I thought she was so beautiful. But her story was painful because it was a story of the loss of a relationship, the loss of a marriage, the loss of a structure, of a family, you know, and of a dream. So when I met her, I'm like, how is this woman still standing? How is she still smiling? But she was, I mean, like radiant. And even in the short amount of time that we stood and talked, I can remember thinking, God, this is grace, isn't it? This is what grace looks like. And my new friend embodies grace. And she teaches us all how to do that during seasons that are painful enough to kill us. That's what she's here to talk about. I asked her immediately to be on the podcast. And of course, she obliged because she's so freaking sweet. But this will be a special interview today, not only for women who have gone through the pain of a divorce, but I believe personally for anyone who has been handed loss and honestly is just not sure what to do with it afterwards. How do we go on? Loss in any fashion. And Kelly Matthews is a friend to loss. She knows loss personally. She knows pain personally, but she's also the perfect example of the grace that we just might find afterwards. And I cannot wait for you to meet her. Welcome, Kelly Matthews, to the podcast.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm so happy to be here.
Girl, I am very happy to have you. Before we get started, just to let everybody know, I've not even known you that long. Met you at an event that I spoke at in Houston. So that's one of my favorite things. I travel, I speak all over, and I love to meet people because, man, everybody has a story. And I remember you just had a brief second. I was signing books and to tell me a little bit about yourself. And I think I shocked you because I just immediately looked at you and said, come on my podcast and tell me that story and tell it to everybody. And you were like, what? But I liked you instantly. This is a crazy thing to say. I liked your face, as my mother would say. You had an honest face, Kelly Matthews. And you would just,
thank you.
You were just precious. You were pleasant. You were a class act. So I think you have a story that is going to resonate with a lot of people, especially a lot of women. But before we get into all of that, Kelly, tell us about yourself and about your people, who you love.
I will totally do that, Melissa. Thank you very much. I think similar to you, I actually grew up in a small town in Texas, just north of Dallas. Went to school, got good grades, went to college in Austin, University of Texas, of course, and to Houston to work. I'm an accountant, hopefully better dressed than what you may be envisioning or that your audience may be envisioning, but I do love a little bit of fashion. But I worked in the big accounting firms for 9 years. You know, it gave me a little bit of polish, taught me a lot about business so that when I got married and had a daughter, about a year afterwards, I actually left the big firms and started my own business 13 years ago. I actually can't believe it's been that long. But as far as my people go, it's really my family and my friends. You know, I have a fabulous relationship with my daughter. She just turned 17 a week ago, which is shocking to me that she's that old, but really lovely. We have navigated the line between mother-daughter, but not quite friends. You know, I think we would be friends if she was 47 instead of 17, which is a lovely thing to say. I'm super close to my parents. They live 30 minutes away. My daughter and I just hosted their 50th wedding anniversary, which was fabulous and joyous and all that you want it to be. So that was fantastic. And then my friends, I play Bunko. Do you know what Bunko is?
Boy, do I, girl. I do. Let me tell you something. I would be a rowdy Bunko girl for you. I am a screamer because I never win a dadgum thing ever.
Right.
So when I do, I mean, I'm just like elated. I'm all over the place. Y'all would hate me.
You can sub for us anytime you're in Houston. We play on Wednesdays. So we'll have to talk about that later. But we've been together for over 20 years. You know, if you think about 20 years in a woman's life, what we have seen and kind of traveled with each other is amazing. So I'm very blessed to have my middle school moms. There's a pack of us. We call ourselves the six pack, not because of beer, but because there were six of us. And we really locked arms and marched our daughters through middle school and helped them get through what I believe is one of the toughest things in a woman or a man's life is those middle school years. My swim moms, my women's business group, I've been blessed to have these groups of people and mostly women, but groups of people in my life that have really supported me through different things that have happened to me. So, you know, lovely support system between friends and family.
You know, we have a saying at our church that I go to, we won't do life alone. And I know that you adhere to that as well. I can tell just by talking to you in this little bit, that's kind of your motto, man, for life. And we're going to find, as Kelly begins to tell her story, why that is so important to Kelly and why it's so vital that we don't do life alone as we move into this next portion of the podcast. Now, Kelly, you have a story that is not unique to people and that it now affects 50% of all marriages, and that is divorce. 50%. And when I say 50, I'm reminded that just recently you helped celebrate your parents' 50th year of marriage. And I know that that's what you wanted for yourself as well. You wanted your daughter to throw that party for your 50 years. So I know no one likes to talk about it, but I would love if you would set the scene for us today a little bit for our listeners. Tell us about your husband, how he brought it up, how it really came out of nowhere for you, I believe. I want you to, as painful as it might be, tell us that story.
Sure. And you're right, Melissa. It was completely out of nowhere. Our daughter goes to sleepaway camp every year. And honestly, it's something that she looks forward to. And quite frankly, we looked forward to that return to just being adults for a little bit of time. We dropped our daughter off at camp, went on a date, we went to a movie. I mean, who goes to a movie anymore? You know, it costs too much to get a babysitter. So went on a date, got home, and my husband of 18 years looked at me and said, I have something I want to talk to you about. And I could tell it was kind of serious in his tone. And he had just this funny expression on his face. I looked at him and I said, okay. And he said, I'd like to get separated. Sunday night, right before we went to bed. And we talked into the evening. Next morning, got up on Monday and went to work. I'm not sure why. I think maybe we were just on auto programming at that point, right? You just kind of revert to your routine. We go to work and we came home Monday night, sat down on the couch, and he looked at me, reached in his pocket and pulled out two pieces of paper. And he said, you know, about that separation, I actually meant divorce. And here's a 2-page property settlement, including custody. That was Monday night. And on Wednesday, he got an apartment and moved out. So Thursday, I woke up and I drove the 5 hours to camp to pick up my daughter by myself and bring her home. And I will tell you, that drive home, honestly, I think looking back, you think about the core of strength that you have and when that's tested. I really feel like that is one of my proudest parenting moments because I knew what was coming in my daughter's life. I had just experienced 4 days of it and I knew what was coming and I put a smile on my face and I basically drove those 5 hours home singing with her the whole way on songs that she loved and really had this kind of almost a seed of joy. Because I knew what was coming. You know, well, as much as you can know.
Oh, sure.
It was a very, very difficult time. It's interesting. It was actually 3 years ago this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Timing's everything, isn't it, Melissa?
But Kelly, I mean, you tell a story. Like, okay, so here's the deal. Divorce is the ultimate having the rug pulled out from under your feet. You have this marriage. You have these kids. You work the plan. You work the system. We're getting out of debt. We're sending them to college. And then divorce comes and strikes a home and I hate it and I'm mad about it. But you, Kelly Matthews, had the ultimate because it happened in a series of literally like 72 hours. Everything came crashing down. You know, we have some couples that go to counseling and so they've got 6 weeks or they got 6 months that they're investing in this. Yours was 3 days. I can't fathom it.
You know, it's interesting you talk about counseling. What I didn't mention is Tuesday, I was in to see a therapist. And, you know, about 8 years before, you know, I owned my own business. I had some stressful times in that. I was growing it. I'd actually put myself in the hospital a couple of times because of anxiety, you know, and just the stresses of, you know, life in general. And so I actually met a therapist that helped me with anxiety 8 years before. So when all of this came crashing down that Tuesday, I went in to see my therapist and she looked at me and the first thing she said to me was, Kelly Matthews, this is a gift. And I will tell you, Melissa, that was not what I was expecting.
No, I would have been like, I'll take my check back now, please. Thank you.
Yes. But I will say, with time, I came to appreciate at least what she was conveying to me, where, you know, I look back on that time and you think about like the worst football injury you've ever seen, you know, Joe Theismann or some, you know, I hate to bring that image up, but where someone has just broken their leg so severely and it takes surgery, maybe more than one, a cast, rehab, but the break is clean and it was set by experts. And so you have the time to heal versus, and I'm not advocating a quick divorce at all. That's not what I'm advocating, but it was what I was handed and it gave me the opportunity. It gave me the gift to start the healing without breaking and re-breaking. And again, if I'd had the opportunity, we certainly would have tried to move forward, but that's not what was presented to me. So, you know, I certainly advocate counseling and doing what you can, but I do think there's a point where you may not be given the choice or the only choice is that destination is divorce, unfortunately.
And I appreciate very much that you keep saying, but this is the hand that I was dealt. And you're right, because everybody's story is different. But when you put it into words like that, I get what she's saying. I get that the pain of these marriages that break apart, but then he's going to move back in and we're going to make another go of it. And so you're resetting that bone only to break apart. So I can see that that's not everyone's story, nor everyone's journey. And guaranteed, there are 100,000 break apart, break apart, break apart that end up successfully. They put in the work, they put in the time. And I know you are the biggest cheerleader of that, but that wasn't what you were handed. And I want to talk today about what happens afterwards. Because here's the deal. We can talk about him all day long. We can talk about why he did what he did and what was your reason. And, oh, are you telling me, Kelly, that you never saw this coming? Well, first of all, time brings a lot of perspective. No doubt, I'm sure you can look back and point to little things here and there that you probably should have picked up on. Even as your friend, I don't know why your marriage fell apart. That's not what we're here to discuss. I want to discuss the afterwards after papers are signed and arrangements are made and mediations are over and kids have been told and their little hearts have been broken. It's about picking up all the pieces and putting them back together in a way that looks very different, I would imagine. And I love this quote. You wrote this. We always send out a pre-show questionnaire, listeners. We get a little questionnaire about them ahead of time. And you said something that I love. This is what you said. I spent the next 18 months working to a place of happiness. Working to create the new version of me, built on the foundation of who I was, but with the added strength of survival embedded in the mortar of the bricks being laid. That's a powerful sentence. Let it be the first sentence of a book if you ever write a book. it's a beautiful sentence that I am what I have always been, but now there are new pieces of me. And it goes between the bricks of this life I'm rebuilding. And I want to talk about it for a moment. Let's talk about how we survive. How did you survive?
The first thing I did is I got up every day. I didn't lay in bed. I got up. I took a shower. I put my makeup on, which, you know, if you're in Texas, that's what you do.
You put your face on, girl.
Yes, you do. And then you face the day. You go to work. You do the dishes. You make dinner. Again, you create the new normal based on what you knew. You get help. You know, I mentioned that I had a therapist that helped me. And one of the things that she told me right from the beginning is she said, you need a support team. You need one for your daughter and one for you. And so almost immediately, you know, within the first month to 6 weeks after my husband had left, I went to my daughter's head of the middle school. I went to her swim coach, to her youth leader at church, and one-on-one talked to them about what was happening in her family. And I asked them, you know, would they be, and I said it this way, would you be a member of my daughter's support team? she is here with you and not when she's with me, right? Her kids are in school 40 hours a week. And my daughter swims like 20 hours a week, you know, goes to church a couple times a week. I was like, when I'm not here, can you be there? If she just needs to come in and sit for a minute, just catch her breath. You know, I want you to know what's going on so that you can help her and maybe just be a quiet person in the room.
That is huge. That is huge what you did. I think that is brilliant. I love that you did that. Okay, keep going. I don't mean to interrupt you, but kudos to you for doing that.
Thank you. Well, and then I told my daughter that I had done it. So she knew where to go. I mean, keep in mind, she was in eighth grade, still the end of middle school. That's a tough year. You know, and I told her, if you need to, go into the middle school office and just sit there for a minute. You know, it's okay. You can do that. And then I moved on to myself and I looked at who did I want on my support team. I did not blast this on Facebook or this is what's happening to me. I picked my core group and I basically sat down with each one of them individually and said, this is what's happening. And I think the most important thing I did, because when I look at the people in my life, I've surrounded myself with cheerleaders and caretakers. And I gave each of them in my support team, I gave them a job. Because if I didn't, they were going to overwhelm me with care. Have dealt with it at that point, right? I was still, keep in mind, I was concentrating on just getting up and taking a shower and putting my makeup on, right? Those were like big deals for me at that early stage. And so I gave them a job. I asked one of my friends, because I couldn't cook a stitch. My ex-husband did all the cooking in our house. I asked one of my friends, I was like, will you please come up and teach me how to cook a chicken breast? She's like, yes, I will. So I asked my bunker group, I said, will you come with me to a dinner that I have or an event that I have where I need a plus one? Will you be my plus one, somebody that I trusted, that I cared for? And we'd have a great time. And they said, yes, we'll do that. So I very thoughtfully not only created or chose who was going to be on my support team, I also individually thought about what were the gifts of that person? Why were they in my life? Why were they on the support team? And I guess I gave them an assignment, if I look at it kind of clinically, but how they could actually help me. Because if left to their own devices, they would help me the way they felt best. And I felt it was my job or my duty to tell them what I needed. And that was hard.
Okay, I'm just going to tell you, I have a friend, one of my very best friends, going through a divorce. And I feel ill-equipped 90% of the time. I feel ill-equipped with my words. I can't stand prayer emojis. So I'm sick of sending those, right?
Yeah.
To know what it is specifically that she wants would be a godsend. But now, that's not putting any blame on her. Chances are she's trying to just figure out like where her car keys are, bless her heart. And I get that. I think what you did is really very important, not just for you, but for them. Which I don't know how in the midst of all this, that's only God, Kelly, that you ended up helping them, but to tell them what your needs were. And I know you, Angela, would be really good at helping me cook chicken. And I know you, Megan, would be the perfect plus one because you always make me laugh and you never make me feel lonely. I think that's genius. And here's the deal, listeners, if you're the one going through the divorce, try this. And if you're the one standing beside the one going through a divorce, say, what is it you've always liked about me? Let me be that for you. Again, I'm going to interrupt you every time I have a hallelujah moment. That's one of them, girl.
It is one of the things I love about being around you, Melissa. So thank you. Well, I think the other big thing for me was I'm a pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of girl, right? I mean, we can get through anything. And I will tell you, this time in my life, it almost broke me. I think Eric Clapton at one point said that he doesn't remember like 1972 or something. I may be massacring his quote, but it's something like that. I don't remember the month of August after this happened. Like it's just this blur for me. There's no, you know, I obviously remember setting up the support teams, but like everything else is just this kind of foggy void. I know I did things, but it's all a blur. And what I realized, because I will tell you, there were some things that went through my mind that were not healthy, you know? I'm not a big drinker, but I thought maybe I should. You know, I wanted to dull what I was feeling. You know, I'm really good at my job. And there was a part of me that at about 3 a.m. one night, I thought, maybe I should just get up and go back to work because I got so much positive feedback from work that I was good at what I did. And I remember thinking, and there were other thoughts that came through, but I remember thinking, I can either deal with all of these emotions right now, or I can deal with them later. They are not going away. And if I put this box on them or pour them into a bottle or out of a bottle, that is just delaying the inevitable. And it hurts now. Do I want to continue to hurt for years? Or do I want to live through this, experience it, and come out on the other side?
So essentially what you're saying is, I can either deal with the pain of this divorce now, or I can deal with the pain of this divorce and alcoholism later, or I can
Correct.
Deal with the pain of this divorce and gambling debts later. I'd rather just deal with the one right now instead of the three later.
Yes. And you said it earlier, I do think that was divine, because it's so easy to go with what you know and dull, or seek out something that has given you, you know, positive reinforcement in the past. But choosing the path that's harder is hard. And that's what I did. And it was hard. It was hard. I remember at one point going in and talking to my therapist, and I walked in and I sat down and I looked at her and I said, "Do you think I'm a sociopath?" And she looked at me and I could tell that I'd surprised her. And just as an aside, you don't ever want to surprise your therapist. Like, that is a bad path to go down. And I could tell I had surprised her. And so she looked at me and very clearly said, "I don't believe you are, but why do you?" And I'd read this article that apparently 30% of all C-suite executives, so you know, your CEO, your presidents, are clinical sociopaths. Well, technically, in my little small business, I'm the president. So I'm like, well, I meet that criteria. And I looked at her and I said, "I don't feel anything right now." And she looked at me and she had the smile on her face. I could see her visibly relax, right? I had gone from scary to back to normal, I think, or as normal as I could be right then. And she said, "Oh, Kelly, that's anger." And I said, no, I don't feel any anger. I don't think so. And she said, "Oh, it's coming." And it did. Awful, Melissa. You know, I don't have an angry bone in my body. It's not how I'm made. And that period of time, it lasted months. You know, you hear people talk or you read books about people being enraged, or, you know, they were in a towering rage. And I was, and I had to keep it all bundled in, just the unjustness of it, the unfairness of it, and work through that. And it was miserable. But, you know, at the end of the day, given time, a lot of exercise, some therapy, I made it through that stage of recovery. And that's really what it is recovery.
Whew, it's like a towering inferno, I'm sure. For those who are listening today, I picked up on something that you said, and I want to make sure that they understand. Kelly is not saying, "I put my makeup on every single day and I just put on a mask and I kept going." That's not at all what she's saying. What she's saying is, "I didn't let it take me over." I believe that's what you're saying. Correct me if I'm wrong. I, for one, have gone through very difficult times in our marriage. We have never sought divorce, but we got dangerously close. I know what it feels like to go through sadness over a child or sadness over infertility. And yeah, there were days I didn't put my face on. I laid in bed. But I think what we're saying here is, I didn't let it have the final say.
Agreed.
And you have a child in your home. She's got to see that you're up and moving, that mom's taking a shower. Mom's not just laying there for 6 weeks at a time, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that you can move forward. You know, life is incredibly joyous most of the time, but there are periods in life where it lays you very low. And this was one of mine. You're right, Melissa. I had a 14-year-old in my house at this point when this was going on. And I had to show her and hopefully be an example later on that when life does lay you low, that you can move forward, that you can get up every day and deal with what life has given you and move on and be happy, stretch for that, reach for that, and know that it's coming, even though it may be a long way off.
I hear what you're saying about the sociopath and that you never want to surprise your or shock your therapist. I do believe I maybe have asked mine the same thing. She wasn't the least bit shocked. What does that say about me? I think I've said, "Could I be a serial killer? Do you think that I have the potential to be a serial killer or some kind of psychopath?" And I think her words were, "I've thought about it." I love women who want to use their story, who want to use their fortune, who want to use their misfortune as a launching pad for their voice. I'm so appreciative of that. And that's one of the reasons why I was so struck by you when we met. Here's what you said when we met. I don't know if you remember this, but you said, "Melissa, I'm going to write a book, but it's not going to be for people going through a divorce," which side note, is nuts because you could write it so well and so eloquently. So please rethink that. Anyway, you said it's going to be for the people who love the people going through the divorce. And I love that because, like I said, I have someone very close to me going through a very painful, very shocking divorce right now. And I'll be honest, I don't know what to say or do. And I am someone who is oftentimes a bull in a china shop with my words and my actions. And so I want to be careful, right? I want to be good at it. So talk to me about what it is you want us to know. Think about the titles for your chapters are all things that friends have said to you. Now, you may have changed your mind since we spoke last, but talk to the people who love the hurting people.
I will. And you're totally right. Actually, I'll give you three of my chapters right now. These are the chapter titles. And I'll talk to you about the people who said them to me and what it meant. I'll also tell you three things not to say.
Ooh, okay.
The first thing to say is actually what my college roommate said to me. We lived together for 6 years and still talk every month. And what she said was, "You were wronged." And that was such a powerful statement to me so early on, because without having to defend myself or explain or convince her that I needed her to help me, in one short sentence, "You were wronged," we didn't have to talk about any of that. I could dive right in to what I needed from her. And she helped me by just taking that burden off that maybe people would think I was horrible, or because your mind and who you are during a period of great trauma like this is not who you are every day. And so having that reassurance of someone who's so important and so long lived in my life, you know, we met when we were 16, so important to me and made such a difference. The second thing, and what's interesting about this, is I had no idea what my friend Sarah was talking about when she said this. She said, "You feel what you feel, and that's what you feel." What does that mean? I had no idea. And I kind of looked at her, and I may have even scratched my head, like physically, I'm not quite sure, but I was like, okay. And I kind of moved on. And it took me a couple of months to realize that the emotions that I was feeling was so out of character. You know, I mentioned anger, but also incredible despair. I mean, there were days when I literally would be in my house, hands on my knees, bent over, sobbing. I could hardly catch my breath. And I remember Sarah saying, "You feel what you feel, and that's what you feel." And it took the shame of these just swinging emotions that I had. You know, I'm the mom. I'm supposed to be put together. I'm supposed to have it all figured out. And I didn't. And taking the shame away and really allowing myself to feel what I was feeling was so freeing. And I had her permission, for lack of a better word, I had her permission to just feel through whatever that emotion was and accept that that's how I felt that day and move forward. So that was a very poignant thing for her to say to me, and one that I didn't understand until I kind of really moved through almost the first year of my divorce and then reflected back on that. And the third thing, and this one was said so casually, and I think because of the casualness of it, it had more impact. But my friend Kim, who's in my Bunko group, we're at Bunko, and several months after my divorce, we're standing in line in the kitchen, we're getting food on our plates to go play Bunko. And over her shoulder, she looks at me and she goes, "You know, you've turned a corner." And I had been working on making some changes and moving forward. The anger had ebbed. You know, I was walking and exercising, and I had made small changes, but very regular changes, things that were really that foundation we talked about. They were going to be part of the foundation of where I'm going. To have someone who's been in my life for so long recognize that without prompting. You know, I wasn't asking, "Oh, do you like my new outfit?" or "How does my hair look longer?" You know, I wasn't asking. She just observed and said it.
And say that line that she said again. I want to make sure everybody has heard it. Say it again.
"You've turned a corner."
It's something as simple as that. It has to be a moment in your heart where you go, "Oh, thank God someone's noticing it, because I think I'm crazy half the time and I feel like I'm making steps, but I'm a nut. So I can't trust myself." The fact that you're noticing it means something, right?
It does. And it's different from, you know, when you go through the year after your divorce, You may gain weight. You may lose weight. Your hair may look great. It may look bad. You know, there's some physical things that are very easy to comment on. And trust me, especially if you're losing weight, you always appreciate hearing that. But having someone say you've turned a corner, to me, that was a deeper level of recognition of what you were doing and moving towards. And it was huge for me. It was very empowering. And it was kind of almost like a punch in the arm, like keep it up, you know, without saying that. So I love Kim and loved her for doing that.
I actually love all of those things. I mean, I love you feel what you feel and that's how you feel. I want to say you feel how you feel and that's the deal, man. I mean, that's just the deal.
Right.
So feel all the things. And it's okay if I pick you up for lunch and you just curse the entire time. I mean, we won't probably get a lot done, but if that's how you're feeling that day, feel it. But woe to those who want us to heal quick and move on because they're tired of hearing about it. Ladies and gentlemen listening today, who said feel all the things? Who was that girl?
Sarah.
Find you a Sarah. I'm going to tell y'all right now. Find you a Sarah and kick anybody else out who says, seriously, it's been like months. It's been months. I want to help you get out, girl, and find somebody and cut your hair. And woe to them who want us to heal quickly. It takes time.
It does.
And I also completely understand the feeling of you were wronged, because now I don't have to prove that I was a bad wife. I don't have to prove that I dropped the ball. And even if I did, we ain't got to talk about it because you are for me. When you make that statement, you are for me. And those are all so beautiful. But dear God, help us. What are we not supposed to say? These are ones I'm scared about.
Well, yes, I think honestly so. The first is you will be so lonely.
What? Somebody did not say that.
They did. And I will tell you, it was not said from a place of cruelty. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But they were sharing their journey, and their journey included a huge dose of loneliness. So they were trying to prepare me for what could be ahead. Again, it wasn't said from a cruel standpoint, but it was heart-wrenching for me to hear. In some ways, I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, but I wonder if that isn't what then continued to connect me to all of these groups around me, right? Would really avoid that or prevent the loneliness. And I haven't been lonely, which I feel very blessed to have people in my life that have prevented that. But that was a very hard thing. I would encourage anyone listening to really eradicate the word lonely from your discussions when you're talking with someone who's going through this. You know, even if it's, I'll keep you from being lonely, you've now entered that word into the dialogue. Take the word out, eradicate it for the next at least year.
Okay. So I was going to ask that. I'm glad you mentioned that. When you told me that it was someone who had dealt with it themselves, I became a little bit less angry. But I was sitting here as you were talking, trying to think, okay, well, what would be the best way to say that? And I would think maybe the best thing that this person could have said is, and hey, if it ever gets too quiet or gets too still, call me. We can hang out together. There might be nights when the house is just really quiet. Just give me a call. Is that better? Or am I, you can tell me the truth. Am I saying it wrong?
You know, what I would encourage is as the friend surrounding the person going through it, don't put the burden on them to reach you. You reach out, send a text before you go to bed. I'm thinking about you. I'm going to pray for you tonight. Can we go to lunch next week? Can we go to lunch next month? You take the burden on of caring for them because they have so many things on their mind already. Reaching out to you, scheduling lunch may not be something they're even capable of doing.
Got it. So, okay, that makes sense. So let's just all shut up about being lonely. Nobody say it. We're not idiots. We know we might be. Nobody say it. I love this.
Take the word away.
I love it. Moving on.
So the second one, and I'm going to preface this by saying it is the exact opposite of you've turned a corner. So please don't anyone ever say, have you gotten a cat yet?
Kelly, now I just threw my hands up over my face. Nobody said that. Please tell me that that person was like 75 or older.
I have obviously more capability now, but I look at it and I think they want you to have companionship. And that is an easy way to get a companion that will be with you for a long time. So again, it's not said from cruelty. They don't want you to be the cat woman with 12 cats. I mean, that's not what they're going for. I believe it's coming from a well of goodness. They just don't know how to express it. Again, it's on the list of things not to say.
Right. Oh, mercies. Oh, I just wish they'd say that to me. I would have said 18. I just got my 18th cat. You should come over. Oh, I love it. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so the last thing not to say, with one exception, there's a few people that can say this, and I'll tell you who they are. But the phrase that you should not say is, are you dating? Now, the exception to that is if you were in the room when their children were being birthed or you were a bridesmaid in their wedding. That's the caveat. Those people can ask that question.
Because those are close people. Those are close people.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
And obviously the criteria for that is different for every person, but it has to be someone very, very close. And you know if you're close enough to ask that question. It's very similar to asking a woman, when are you due? You're not pregnant. Or, you know, that friend that you had in their 20s and they didn't get married until 30, but they dated for 5 years and everybody's, are you getting engaged? It's in the same bucket as those two questions. And again, I was asked that honestly, probably 50 to 100 times. When I was first asked that, I thought that's so invasive and I was surprised, but I came to realize it was an easy question for people to ask to see if you were through the healing process, had you moved on, instead of really exploring that. But I would recommend not asking that unless you're in, you know, kind of the inner circle, because moving from not dating to dating is a huge decision. And so it needs to be somebody that can really talk with you about what that means to you and not just the question of, are you done healing or are you through the healing process? Are you moving forward? Which I think is really what people are trying to get to with that question.
Listeners, wherever you are, if you're on the treadmill, if you're in your car, if you're sitting in your computer, listen, let's just make a pact right now, all of us, okay? I want to believe in my heart of hearts that most of the women listening to this podcast today have enough sense to not do that. But we know our husbands and our boyfriends and our brothers and our fathers and our grandfathers and our uncles don't. Can we just tell all the men's, y'all? So I'm going to say to David Radke, if you see, and I'm going to make up a name, if you see Henrietta at the family reunion, don't ask her if she's dating, fool. Don't. Just don't. And he'll say, why? I just like to tease her and have fun with her. Hey, let's find a different way. Maybe ask her if she got a cat. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that either. Okay, but we got to tell the men. But surely, women, surely we won't do it. Let's don't do it. Let's be a friend. And I think that these are just such wise things. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. I'm sorry you had to go through hell to find that kind of wisdom, you know, but thank you. I want to know what post-divorce Kelly looks like compared to pre-divorce Kelly. When you put yourself back all together again, what do you find? Who are you now?
You know, it's interesting, Melissa. I followed the script. I read the manual, right? You get good grades, you go to school, you meet a boy, you get married, you buy a house, you have kids, you work hard. I followed all of that. And it ended up not working out the way I planned. Like you said earlier, I was expecting a 50th wedding anniversary, and that's probably not in the cards for me. But I look at the choices that I've made since divorce, and I'm so happy with where my life is, with where it's going. I'm healthier than I've been in decades. I'm rested, which honestly, if you're a mom, can you even utter that word? I don't think you can. And so I was running on a treadmill, not an actual treadmill, but I mean, I was running on life's treadmill and I was exhausted. I was at everything. Like if you had looked at my good mom report card or good business person report card, I had all A's. I was doing all the things you're supposed to do to be good at something, but I was missing life. I was running right by it because I was running to the next thing I had to be at. And I feel like post-divorce, I actually had some time. It was an unintended consequence of my divorce is I had some time and I gave myself some time to think about some things. You know, one of the downsides of divorce is you have custody where your children aren't with you for a period of time. And I made a very conscious choice early on that I was going to use that time for good. I mean, just as an aside, how many times when your kids were like one that you thought, if I could just have an hour to myself? And I remembered back to that and I thought, you know, I've been given 8 days a month where my children are not with me. And that could have been absolutely destructive to me. And I chose not to have that happen. I'm going to use this time to rebuild myself, use that time for better purposes. And so I look at that and that time that I was given, I thought, who do I want to be? What do I want to do? And I looked at who was I? You know, I was a kind person. And quite frankly, I wasn't very kind after my divorce. And I missed that about myself. And so I looked back at who I was and what I liked about myself and where I wanted to go. And I started building that. It's really interesting. One of my women in my women's business group challenged me to write, and I kind of giggle when I say this because I think it's such a funny phrase, but a personal mission statement. Like, I'm not the type of person that would write a personal mission statement, but it was one of those things that it came up three times in very close succession. Someone from my business group said it, and then I got that recommendation from two other people unrelated to them. And I'm a big believer, you know, both of my parents are preacher's kids, and my mom always told me, God is not sending a burning bush. Pay attention. I feel like, you know, when there's three things that come in close succession, as one of my friends says, it's a God wink. Pay attention and do something. So I sat down and I wrote a personal mission statement. And it really has governed or helped me govern the decisions that I've made. So what is it? It's be kind, learn continuously, and change the world one person at a time. And so when people ask me if I want to do something, or if I want to take a class, or if I want to try something new, I go back to my personal mission statement and I think to myself, is it part of this? And if it is, I do it, you know, because I'm being true to who I am and who I want to be. And so that's been really, really helpful in staying true to where I'm going and not falling back into old habits, you know, and really enjoying and savoring life. And it's helped me align what's important to me, which is my friends and family, with where I'm spending my time. And that's probably the biggest change. You know, we can talk about health and restfulness, et cetera, but I look every day at what am I doing today? And does it benefit the people that are important to me? And at the end of the day, I can usually say yes, which is nice.
I'll tell you what, I was sitting here listening to you. I think that is just beautiful. And I have one more question, and I probably shouldn't ask it because that was just perfect way to wrap up. But I think it's so beautiful. And I want to just point out for anyone listening today, how well, really, Kelly, that you have spoken, not just to women who've been divorced, but to women who've been widowed, to women who have just sensed devastation and they are left standing alone, raising a family without a helper. And I think that the best podcasts are the ones who start with a singular aim and just end up reaching so many. My goodness gracious, you've provided us that today. So with this last question, you've got women on here listening today, Kelly, who their world is just devastated. It's blown apart. They just buried their husband. They just buried their fiance. They just divorced their high school boyfriend. They were just left by the man of their dreams. And you have a moment to speak to them. What is it that you would want them to know?
In a nutshell, you can be happy again. It's going to take time. And you have to choose it. Because if you don't choose it, you're going to stay stagnant in what you know. And what you know right now may have anger and resentment and regret and bitterness. And I will tell you, for me, that's not what I wanted the next part of my life to contain. And I chose not to have that. I lived through all of those things. They don't go away miraculously. You have to address them and deal with them. But you have to choose to live a different life. And it's scary. It's easy to stay with what you know. It's scary to try something new, to maybe fail spectacularly, but it's living and it's choosing the life that you want to live. I'll say there are two things that were really helpful to me that I did that helped propel me, you know, kind of on that path, help propel me forward. And I think one of those things was I came up with, and again, I'm not sure where this came from other than I needed help, but I came up with, for lack of a better word, a decision tree for when questions came up, whether it was from people asking about my divorce, questions from my ex-husband, which shockingly you go through this and you still have to talk with each other, especially if you have children. So how do you deal with that and set the stage for conversations that you're going to have for years to come? And so I set this decision tree for how I was going to address these questions that were coming in when honestly I wasn't in a mindset to answer appropriately or even consistently. And what I did is I looked at first, am I legally required to answer this question or do what's being asked of me? So think about a divorce decree. If I'm legally required, I did it, no qualms. Second, is it good for my daughter and bearable for me? Because if it didn't meet both of those criteria, the answer was no. What's interesting is as time has gone by, things are more bearable for me. And so it's easier for me to answer more and more questions.
And thank you also for not leaving yourself out of that. You know, you could have easily said, is it good for my daughter? But we have to consider ourselves in that. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going, please.
No, we do. And it is very important because I think especially as mothers, when you look at that question, you want to do everything for your children, but you have to be able to be there to do that for them and be emotionally stable enough to continue to do things for them. So that was my goal in that. And then last, is it good for me? You know, I remember one day my ex-husband asked, can I pick up Georgiana from swimming? And swimming was an hour round trip for me. And I said no, because I had the power to say no. There was like a 10-car pileup, took 2 hours. Why didn't I just say yes? But it's coming up with something that's very consistent. So looking at individuals who are right in the middle of the trauma, having a way to consistently answer the questions was very helpful to me. It took the burden off of coming up with a new answer every time or a new way to answer. And an interesting benefit that came out of that, especially with my ex-husband, was it actually modified how he asked me questions. And I'll give you a great example. When he turned 50, we were supposed to go to Paris together. And so he asked me through text, I'm going to Paris for my 50th birthday. Can we trade weekends? That's incredibly painful to hear. And what I found is as I started using this decision tree, he changed how he asked me for things. So now when he asks me something, he says, I'm going to be out of town for the weekend. Can we switch weekends? Well, that's much easier, at least for me. It was a much easier way to hear the question and then respond without this emotional response to really what isn't the question. So it's interesting. It's really helped our relationship post-divorce move really to a very cordial place, which was my goal. And I feel that we've achieved that.
And you also just proved there's a statement. Would love to give credit. I don't know who said it. You teach people how to treat you. And that's really what you're doing there.
Yes. And I will tell you, I'm an accountant. I like some procedure, right? So it was very comforting to me to have this very easy way to just sit down and think about the piles of questions that are coming in that I really just wasn't equipped to handle at the time. And so it's been very, very helpful, or was very helpful, especially early on. I don't have to use it very much anymore, but I can feel myself when I'm having an emotional response to something. I think, okay, hold on. Let me pull this back out and see how I feel about it. And I'm like, oh, I can make a good decision now, you know, and then I move forward. So I think the other thing, and it dovetails off of something you said earlier, is the second thing, and this comes much later. You're headed towards healing, or hopefully choosing to head towards healing, but you need to find something new to talk about. You mentioned earlier giving people the time to heal, and that happens at a different place for everyone. But one of the things that I started to see in my friend's eyes was what I call divorce fatigue. I was waiting for my ex-husband to do something to me so I had something to talk about. How terrible is that? And so I realized when my friends started to want to talk about other things, they were actually giving me some feedback, maybe too fast, maybe too slow on the healing process, but it was something that I kind of took in and I thought, I'm waiting for him to do something bad to me so that I'm interesting, not the life that I want to lead. I want to have something interesting to talk about because of who I am and that people are interested in being around me. And so it really pushed me, or at least started me on the path of thinking about and looking forward to what's next and what do I want next to be. And I have a list. I have a list of things. And so every Thanksgiving, I actually write down 25 things that I want, not that I should do, not that my mom wants me to do, not that's required, but actually 25 things I want the following year. And I use that to then try something new. I'm going to take Spanish this year. I'm going to take a Spanish class. I'm about to take my 4th writing class, you know, to write my book. I don't know how to write a book. So I took a class to do it. And I've really enjoyed that. And it's given me something else to talk about. So those two things, having a way to answer the questions early on, and then giving you the push to try something new. So you have something new to talk about, something interesting that you're interested in, and to give you a place to start looking for your next passion, I think is really essential.
I just think that that is such extensive heart work that you've done. It really, truly is. That's a phrase that I use a lot. We say that we need to do the hard work, and I change that to heart work. You have done it, and you have done it well. And as I was listening to you talk, I was just thinking, dear God, 50%, half of our listeners have dealt with this. And so I just don't think there could have been a kinder, wiser, more well-spoken person to interview today on this topic than you. Honestly, I really don't, Kelly. You've handled it beautifully. Your life is an example of that. We thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks so much for listening to Ordinary People, Ordinary Things. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We don't want you to miss anything that we've got going on. And also, I know that a lot of times people leave reviews. If the podcast is like brand spanking new, they'll leave a review. But maybe it's been a while and you want to leave a review and you want to tell us one of your favorite episodes. We'd just love to hear from you. So please leave a really nice review, one that Jesus and your mother would be proud of. All right. So we are back with Kelly Matthews. We are going to wrap up on a lighter, more fun note. Kelly lives in the Houston area, which is close to me, which I'm always happy about whenever I interview. This season, I think I'm interviewing like two Houston people. That's it. So I need all the good places to eat. And that's my first question. What is your go-to order at your favorite hometown restaurant?
So my favorite hometown restaurant, and this comes all the way back from college, is at Texadelphia. It is totally a sports bar. You go in your jeans and your t-shirts, you can watch football, and they have something called a chicken cheesesteak sandwich. So think of a Philly cheesesteak, but with chicken, and they have this mustard sauce that is to die for. So I've actually asked what's in it, and they started telling me some of the ingredients because I thought it's mustard. It's like 24 calories. No, it's not. Just move on and get it and enjoy it.
I was going to say, Kelly, I had you pegged for the like strawberry pecan salad that's like how I had you pegged. And you come out with a chicken cheesesteak. I'm like, I've never been more proud of you, Kelly Matthews. All right.
Thank you.
I love this question right here. In a nutshell, because community is so important to you, what does friendship mean to you?
Friendship is having a person in your life when you have a hole, they fill it. My friend Lynn, when I told my bunco group that I was getting divorced, you know, I walked through the whole story like we did today. And she sat on the couch. And through the entire time, she sat with tears rolling down her face. And it was at a period of time in my journey, I couldn't cry anymore. And she cried for me. And it still tricks me up a little bit because I needed someone to cry for me. And she filled that hole at a time where she didn't even know how important that was for me. So that's what I think friendship is as you go through life, it's the people next to you that fill the potholes and let you keep walking on the journey. And you do the same for them.
I love it. Kelly Matthews, who would play you in a movie?
I think Julia Roberts. And the only reason I say that.
I love it.
Blonde hair. She's got a dire hair. Blonde. She has a big smile. I don't think my teeth are quite as big as hers, but I've got a big smile and that resonates with me.
Well, whose are, honestly, as big as Julia Roberts? But you're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. I love this. And she'd have to get up pretty early. I'm going to tell you what, even though she's an Oscar winner, to play Kelly Matthews, because I just don't think anybody can touch you. But I thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it, Kelly.
Thank you, Melissa. It was fantastic.
When I started this podcast, it was for the distinct purpose of meeting people like Kelly. From time to time, I do enjoy sitting with people who have gone on before me, I guess you could say, and the things that are similar to what I do. You know, people who have written the bestsellers and people who have the million followers and people who speak to the tens of thousands. But by and large, it's stories just like this one from people just like her that I love so stinking much. Why? Because everybody has a story. I do, you do, and our stories are important. But they aren't just important to us. They're important to everyone who is or will one day go through the same thing. But not everyone gets to write the book or gets to speak to the full room. Doesn't make your story any less important. I don't know a lot of things, but this I know. If a story is important to you and to your life, mark my words, it's important to someone else too. And who in the wide world hasn't had divorce come straight to their home, their family, their friends? If that's you, if even now you're feeling the weight of this terrible, heartbreaking decision, please know you're not alone. You're not. There are people on every street and every neighborhood and every town who are probably hurting just like you about this same exact thing. But you want to know what's really exciting? What's really hopeful? Also on every street and every neighborhood and every town are people who have already walked through this hell. And now, like Kelly, they're here helping others, guiding others, comforting others. The real miracle is not that the divorce doesn't kill us. The real miracle is that somehow it makes you stronger. If you let it. If we let pain teach us, then we can teach others. And that, my friends, is the real miracle. But as we know, miracles are all around us. We just get so used to seeing them, we call them ordinary things. Till next time.